Welcome to the Casey Kowar Show, a celebration of words, and I'm delighted to have as my guest today Linda Anderson, who has co-written a book with her husband Alan called Rescued, which is published by New World Library and is now available in your bookstores and online. And first of all, Linda, thank you for taking time to talk with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, this is the seventh book that you've written, and as I was reading Rescued, I realized very quickly this was a labor of love for you. And how did the genesis of the book start, and when did you decide that you wanted to write a book about the particular situation that happened down after Hurricane Katrina?
Well, my husband and I have been very devoted to getting out the message that animals are precious and that they are members of the family when they become when they come into your home and those sorts of things. And then when we saw what was happening in Hurricane Katrina, we saw that these animals were being left behind and hundreds of thousands of them were stranded. And we thought, you know, this is really a good opportunity for us to be able to help to get the messages out that we've been trying to get out all these years in a way that that people will find very compelling and will understand because they've seen it on TV and it's brought animal rescue to the fore. And we can take this then and we can get people interested in supporting animal rescue in their own communities. And so we opened up the book to go beyond Katrina into what's going on in animal rescue around the country.
Mm-hmm. And I was introduced to the book by Marilyn Knapp Litt, who was not an animal activist and but had internet savvy and helped form an organization. And one of the things that I would like people to know about the book Rescued is a lot of times I think people see animal rescuers and they think of people that are obsessed with this. And one of the things that you wrote early on in the book is you said a common misconception is that animal rescuers are eager to help animals but indifferent to human suffering, and almost everyone you talk to also donates time and money to other causes. That's the rule, not the exception.
Absolutely. We really wanted to kind of debunk that misconception that people have of the person who is involved in rescuing or sheltering animals, because a lot of people have the impression that, oh, this is somebody who likes animals more than they do people. So we actually put out a survey, and then we used the survey partially to help us do the interviews with all these hundreds of people we talk with. And in the survey, we asked them, what other volunteer work do you do? Well, everybody filled that part in. They were all doing volunteer work, and most of them were volunteering in organizations that help people. So it just isn't true. I think what you have, if you wanted to say there's a certain type of person, is you have a person who is compassionate and cares about others, whether they're human or animal. And most of them have said the same thing repeatedly, and that is, if you help a pet, you actually have, if you saved a pet, you saved a whole family, which is very true.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because a lot of the people, particularly in Katrina, they had lost everything, their homes, their jobs, and they had gone to places like Houston or San Antonio and Atlanta. And to be reunited with a family pet really was a healing experience for families, children, and probably gave people a lot of hope that they were missing up until that point.
Oh, it did. I mean, I think one of the things that Hurricane Katrina brought out is that so often the people who make the policies about how we're going to live our lives and what we're going to do in an emergency in particular totally and completely underestimated the strength of the human-animal bond. And that comes out over and over in the book. You see people who are suffering as a result of decisions other people made that affected them and that said, you know, that just ignored the fact that this love bond that person has with that animal is deeper and stronger maybe than any bond that they have on this earth. Mm-hmm. And that person's going to literally risk their lives to save that animal.
Yes, and there are heartbreaking stories there of people who just simply were not going to to leave their animals behind. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to feature this book, is that because it really is does have an action plan and checklists and quizzes you can take, because it's sometimes in the case, not just Katrina, in any disaster that's impending or coming, the importance of knowing what you're going to do with your animals could be life or death if the children are out in the backyard looking for the cat or the dog and they're not going to leave until it's found. You need to be prepared for this, because it seems like the storms are becoming more frequent and more severe.
Well, there was an article in Time magazine 2 weeks ago that said 91% of the American people live in a moderate to high risk area for natural disaster or terrorism, and that in essence the American public is in denial about this. They have not thought through what they would do in the event of a disaster, much for their families, their human families, much less for their pets. And so what we're doing with this book is we're out there talking about the essentials that you need to do to prepare your family for a disaster. And people are telling us, you know, when I'm thinking about this for my pets, I realize I haven't really thought it through for the rest of my family. So it's actually a book that, with the information in it, can save lives.
Yes. Chapter 19 is devoted to preparing animals for disaster and evacuation, and the checklist in there, like you say, it's applicable to every situation in a preparing for a disaster, not just you know, what to do with your animals and your pets. So it does serve that purpose. And another thing that, as I was reading Rescued, was that the importance that if someone is going to be involved in animal rescue, they do need to be trained, they do need to understand what they're doing, and sometimes you can cause more harm than good if you just, out of perhaps good intentions, just get in your car and drive to the area. You do need the training, you do need to understand what you're doing.
That is so true. We certainly found that as we talked with people, particularly talking with people who had gone several times and were back at home, and they were experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder. When we talk with the experts on that subject, particularly Kathleen Regan Figley, who runs Green Cross, and that's a group that trains social workers and psychologists and other people to help first responders to disasters, to help them to through the stressful parts and afterwards with post-traumatic stress. And what people told us repeatedly was that when you go through training, it doesn't mean that you won't ever have any symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, but it means that you will be more prepared mentally, physically, and emotionally for what you're about to experience. And being prepared helps you to overcome some of the things that would come later had you just been shocked by what you saw, which is what happened. I mean, what you have happening here was an estimated 5,000 to 10,000 people who love animals saw these things on TV, read them in the news, and just came down there, most of them on their own dime, trying to help. And it was shocking because they were seeing the very creatures that they love most on this earth in such dire, horrible conditions. And so a lot of them did come back with these terrible images and nightmares and depression and everything else that goes with all that sort of thing. So, yes, training is just essential.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as far as people that are interested in this type of work, the big three, as you mentioned, are the ASPCA, the American Humane Society, and the Humane Society. So if someone wants to be proactive in terms of being involved in the future, would those be the three that you would recommend that listeners contact in terms of getting training and finding more out about animal rescue?
I think it also depends on what your personality is like. There are other ones that have really specialized totally in disaster training. Those three are certainly a good starting point. They have a wide range of volunteer opportunities that are not related to disasters. And so if disaster is not your thing, but you want to do something to help save the lives of animals, there's all kinds of ways to volunteer. Now, there are some other ones like United Animal Nations Jones and Noah's Wish and Mud Shack and some of these other ones that are setting up and that for maybe for years, Noah's Wish and United Nations have had disaster training that is just renowned throughout the world. People come from all over the world for their disaster training. And if that's what you want to do, that's a really great place to start with those two organizations, because they will then tell you where else you have to go if you want to get into the much more physical aspects of the kind of training that you have to do when you're talking about being in boats and climbing ladders and that sort of thing. And there's all kinds of volunteer opportunities that don't involve any of that. And we have a wonderful story in the book from a woman who volunteered in a wheelchair,
mm-hmm.
and she worked at the intake table. And as you mentioned, Marilyn, with Stealth Volunteers, she had at the peak, she had about 1,000 volunteers all over the country. They were not in the disaster zone. They were working literally night and day trying to reunite people and pets and trying to help get supplies down there to the people who were down there. And so there are countless ways to volunteer.
Yes, and that one of the things that I kept thinking about as I was reading this book was how much was accomplished on a volunteer basis. And when you look at the billions of dollars that the federal government spent and what was accomplished versus what was accomplished through the volunteers. You had truck drivers that volunteered to drive pets once they were found from one location to another. You had people that would drive across the country to transport animals. It really is an uplifting story in that respect, that when people can get behind a cause that they see value in, the spirit of decency and kindness does rule the day.
I'm so glad you brought that out, because sometimes people, when they think about a book like this, they think, oh, this is going to be a real downer. I'm going to read about all these suffering animals. But really what you're going to read about is some of the most incredible human beings that you have ever met. And it makes you just proud to be part of the human race, proud to be an American, to read a book like this, and you see people at their very finest doing things for strangers. They don't know these people, but they have compassion for what they're going through, and they are doing so much good work in this world, and you just very rarely hear about this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. The book we're discussing today is titled Rescued. It's published by New World Library. It's available in your bookstores and online. And one of the things, Linda, I think that people find interesting as well is in Chapter 20, you talk about when the media and the celebrities got involved in the integration of the Internet. We really saw kind of a 21st century thing come together in terms of some very high-profile people brought attention to this, and that really helped out a lot of animals in the end, didn't it?
It really did. One of the animal rescuers' heroes, of course, is Anderson Cooper. He was one of the first people who, in his reports, started to report about what was happening or not happening with the animals, because the animals had been left behind, and not all, of course, but hundreds of thousands of them. And the pieces that he was doing were really getting to these animal people, and that was one of the things that we heard in many, many interviews that we did. We said, why did you go down there? And they said, well, we saw this. And many times it was Anderson Cooper. Sometimes it was Dateline or The Situation Room or Rita Cosby Live or Tyra Banks or even Larry King Live. We have a story in there about a woman, about two women who were able to see that their dog was still alive because Larry King Live was doing a helicopter live broadcast and flying over the area, and below was, he flew over their house and they saw their dog. So and like you said, this was a real 21st century kind of thing. It was like, it really changed the whole face of how people get motivated and where their information is coming from.
Yes, and I think my favorite line in the book was T. Boone Pickens gets involved with Continental Airlines, and when he gets off the plane, someone asked him, is he packing? And they said, no, he brought cash. That works better.
Yes, that was his wife that said that. Lisa Shopa, Continental Airlines, she runs their Pet Safe program. and which is just a marvelous program for anybody who wants to transport their pet. And they got a call from the T. Boone Pickens people. What was happening was the Humane Society of the United States and the Louisiana SPCA were running a big temporary shelter at the Lamar Dixon Expo Center, and they were limited to the number of animals that they could take in, which meant that as these thousands of volunteers came down there, they were bringing in thousands of animals. And where were they going to go? So they had to get permission from the state to start transporting animals out of there. And T. Boone Pickens and his wife Madeline were watching this on TV, and they decided that they wanted to do some airlifts to start getting the animals out of the area to other shelters where they could be treated medically, and people could try to help reunite, and they could be adopted out if there was no person to take them. So when they contacted Continental Airlines, they set up this thing where they would come in, and they would. And the first one was the one you're speaking of, where they came in and they had the T. Boone was getting a little impatient, so he took his crew and they went to Lamar Dixon, and they were bringing the animals back. And Elisa had invited Madeline onto the plane for some tea or something while she was waiting, and she asked Madeline, is he packing? And she says, no, he has cash. That works better. he was going to get those animals out of there. That was the bottom line.
Yeah.
And there's beautiful pictures. You know, the 16 pages of color photos, and there's a really great picture of the cat in the overhead bin on the plane.
Yes.
It's just, oh, boy, I'm telling you. These pictures, when they started coming in from people, we just said, wow. You just feel like you're there when you look at these pictures.
Yeah, you really do. And I would like to stress to people that the book is, this is a very complex issue. And one of the things that I'm doing with the website is last month I interviewed James Lee Burke, and we talked at length about Katrina. Next month I'm going to have historian on, and this is the second in a series on Katrina, because we can't act like this is over and something that's in the past and that we can move on from. We are still in the midst of a crisis there, and we need to keep the focus on that area. We need to keep the focus on helping people and the animals in that area, because a mistake would be to assume that this is behind us.
Well, that's very true, because we went down to New Orleans, and it was pretty shocking to see how devastated it still is. A lot of the cleanup had occurred in terms of getting the initial debris out of the streets and into piles, but every other house had huge piles of debris, and there were literally football fields of long acres of cars that were still underneath the bridges that hadn't been removed. And then the animal situation is just dire. So only half the population returned. So there's a group down there that we visited with, and we actually we're making donations from the book, from proceeds of the book to animal shelters. We made an initial donation to Animal Rescue New Orleans. It's called Arno. And they are they have 2,000 food and water stations set up all around the city, and they have volunteers that have to go out. And every morning, you know, animals need to be fed. It's not like they can just forget about it.
Right.
Every morning, every night, all these homeless animals, they put out food and water for them. And people still are coming from all over the country, and they need volunteers to come to help them to supply these food and water stations. When they trap the animals then, they bring them in, they give them medical attention, and they try to find their families for them. If they can't find their families, then they either send them to a shelter out of state, or they try to adopt them out there. And it's just an ongoing process. Prior to the hurricanes, Laura Maloney, who is the executive director of the Louisiana SPCA, told us in our interview with her that there were 26,000 strays in New Orleans, if you can imagine that. So that's animals that nobody's even looking for.
Mm-hmm.
That still are out there suffering if they didn't die already.
Yeah. And Linda, what is the website that you have where listeners can go and find out more about how they can contribute to organizations that you've kicked the tires on and feel comfortable with? What's the best website that you have that they can go to find out more information?
Well, we have a lot. The website is rescuedsavinganimals.net. rescuedsavinganimals.net, and on there we do have a list of organizations of that we interviewed and that we had some knowledge of. There are just thousands of these organizations. You just go right in your own community, and you're going to find organizations to contribute to that are helping to rescue animals. And certainly not, and many of them did take in Katrina animals and may still be trying to deal with what to do with them.
And in Chapter 21, you have, it's titled Lessons Learned, and my wife Tina Rich, she's a project manager, and part of any project is lessons learned. And what would you say at this point, you interviewed hundreds of people for the book, it's currently still going, what's like the current edition of lessons learned from the situation that you write about in Rescue, would you say?
Well, you brought up something about Marilyn, and she is dealing with stealth volunteers, and some other groups are dealing with the fact that there are two things going on now. One is that many of those animals were shipped to other shelters. Unfortunately, those shelters filled up, and now those animals are being slated for euthanization if they were not adopted out. Well, can you imagine you're a volunteer and you've done all this work and all this effort and you saved this animal's life and now you're finding out that these shelters are euthanizing them? I mean, it's just heartbreaking. It's unbelievable. And then the other thing that's happening is that there are disputes over who owns the animal. Well, those people, many of those people who lost their animals, of course, were totally displaced. They were sent to one part of the country or went there because they were able to get there. The animals were sent to a different part of the country. A lot of those people had no way of knowing that the animal was still alive, or that the animal, or that there was a way to find out if the animal was still alive. And many times there isn't a way to find out. They're just, the records were so poor. So now these people, within the last 6 months, are coming forward and they're saying, oh, you know, we finally tracked down this animal, and the other people like Marilyn have helped them track down the animal. And then they find out that the shelter won't give them the name of the person who has the animal, and the person will not part with the animal, the new person who adopted the animal. So this brings out something that we had in the book, but it really brings out the importance of it. The American Bar Association is in a committee that's being led by Barbara Gislason, who we quote pretty much in the book in this lessons learned part. That committee is setting up an initiative to help to get better record keeping, more uniform record keeping, and also easier relinquishment forms, so people have a better idea of what they're signing if they have to leave a disaster area and their pet is going to a shelter. And all of these things just have to be worked out before another disaster, because that's part of what was happening. We talked to several people who lost their animals, managed to find out where they were, could not get them back because they signed some piece of paper under terrible duress, not knowing what they were signing and being told that they would be able to get their pet back. So there's a lot of those legal issues coming up now.
And is the Red Cross, is there going to be more emphasis on attaching animal facilities, on new facilities they're building? Because when you read the book, you also realize that the police and the firefighters oftentimes were put in very difficult situations, because if they were in a boat, they had to be concerned that a paw could cause the boat to lose air, or that someone might have an allergy in a shelter. So is there some legislation or some planning going forward to make these shelters more animal friendly?
Well, there's several things. There's the Pets Act, which is It has passed the House and the Senate, but it's stuck in a committee, conference committee right now, because they passed two different versions. Now, if they are able to pull that out and use the Senate version, what will happen is the states will be reimbursed. They'll be able to send in their expenses and be reimbursed for rescuing pets along with people. And they will also be reimbursed for setting up temporary pet shelters adjacent to human shelters. Now, that's one of the ideals. If for some reason you get separated from your pet and there's been some kind of a disaster, maybe you were at work when the whole neighborhood was evacuated. That happens quite a bit to people. And somehow or other you need to get reunited. You would be able to know that here's the human shelter, here's the pet shelter. You check your pet in, you're able to go back over and feed your pet, walk your pet, de-stress with your pet, and all that kind of thing until you can get yourself together to get out of the shelter and get your pet out at the same time. That's ideal for people to know exactly where their animals are. And United Animal Nations, American Humane, ASPCA, Noah's Wish, all of these are really on getting the cities and the states to set up these temporary shelters adjacent to each other and to have the animal rescuers working right alongside the human rescuers. That would be the ideal wave of the future. It certainly isn't in place yet. There's a long way to go to get there, but that's what they're heading for.
Mm-hmm. The book we've been discussing today is Rescued. I've been speaking with Linda Anderson, who co-wrote the book with her husband, Alan. And, Linda, when you started out this project, what has been the biggest surprise for you? I can imagine when you started out, you had no idea the complexity of the topic that you were taking on, or because really we've never seen anything like it before. So how did you end up getting your arms around this and finally saying, okay, this book is done as far as, you know, what we wanted to accomplish with what we set out to do with Rescued when you sent it off to the editor? What were a couple of the biggest surprises that you had, having been a person who was well-versed in the subject prior to writing this book?
Well, I think part of it, we called it our own private hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fast-track book, and what that means is that everything is getting in place simultaneously. All the sales and marketing material, all the research that ordinarily would take several years to do is being done really, really fast. Something that would take a couple years at least to write you're doing in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it was night and day, and I'm not kidding you about that.
I believe you.
I mean, we didn't go through anything like what the rescuers went through, but we were up at 5 in the morning and doing interviews before my husband went to work. He'd come home at lunch, we'd do another interview. He'd come home at night, we'd do more interviews. And then putting all that material together and then also spreading out so that the book was not The book was not limited to the Hurricane Katrina, but that it really brought the mainstream public into looking at what is going on in animal rescue today in their communities. So that meant it really had to have two parts to it. So it was a gargantuan process. I really talk about something that stretches you. It was really a stretch, but it was just so beautiful to talk to people that you really admire, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're sitting there, you're listening to people, they've gone through hell, and their love and their devotion and their ability to give of themselves, and really that is what kept us going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, great. Well, thank you so much, you know, for writing the book, because as I say, I think one of the things I think it does is does clear up the misconception that people that are animal rescuers are wackos and that they're more concerned with animal life than human life, which has always bothered me when I've heard that. And I think that's the book accomplishes a lot of things. And I know one of the things it does is I think that it's going to be helpful as kind of a blueprint going forward for people that haven't put much thought into this about the reality of putting it to work in their own homes. So thank you for writing what you could have gone the easy route and just cranked something out. You did not do that. It's a well-balanced book. I think you look at both sides of the issue And so I think you're to be congratulated on writing what, in a very short period of time, what is a balanced book with a lot of research and footnotes and information in it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So our guest today has been Linda Anderson. We've been discussing Rescued. I strongly urge you buy that, and it will be, this is the second in the series on the update on Katrina. And Linda, best of luck. I hope you get some rest now that the book is done. I know you'll be doing some promotion, but good work, and hope to catch up with you sometime down the line.
Thank you.